Support for Strange Fruit comes from Caperton Realty, a locally owned and operated real estate company committed to helping clients find their ideal home in Louisville and surrounding areas. Families and homes, each designed differently. Realtors and listings at CapertonRealty.com.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit by WFPL.
Welcome back, dear listeners. How are you? I guess I gotta give them time to respond. Listeners, how are you? Oh, good. I'm actually great, y'all, because this week in Kentucky was primary election week.
Yes.
And Doc, as I say, election day for me is like what holiday?
Christmas,
y'all. I really am a blur.
I know, when I saw you yesterday.
Baby, I was happy.
Yes.
I was on cloud nine. You know, I really am into politics, y'all, and stuff like that. And so, you know, so anyway, so this week was election week. There were some losses and some wins that I'm happy about. And then also some losses I'm disappointed about. And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all things politics. Doc, you've been on jury duty this week.
Oh my
we're
going
to talk about that. And we have some other things to talk about, y'all. So it's a full episode of Hot Topics, as we call it, Juicy Fruit. So our guest for much of today's show is one of our homies from Louisville. He is a local event planner extraordinaire. Please welcome to the show, y'all, Darian Green. Darian, how are you?
I am well. Oh, thank you.
Are you excited to be? Oh, yeah, the D voice. You can use your real voice, Darian.
It is my real voice.
Darian, are you excited to be here?
I am. I really
good.
Am.
Did you vote yesterday?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Good. Because if you say you didn't, we put you off the show. You better lie.
Okay, I love when you asked him the question. You gave him the side eye.
Yeah, because I'm like looking. Because I'm like, hey, go ahead and pull the door open. If he didn't, I'll be like, Laura, cut the tape, and we'll just have to find somebody else for today. So I appreciate that. Even if you didn't vote, that you lied to me. And listeners, if you all were in Kentucky and you have the right to, I hope that you all voted as well. But nonetheless, so we're gonna talk y'all today about politics, about jury duty. But before that, I want to get you all's opinion on something, right? So there is a couple in upstate New York that is suing their son because they're trying to get him to move out their house, right? So
their
son is 30 years old.
Okay.
Okay, his name is Michael Rotondo, right? So his parents are taking him to court. Like, he's literally going before a judge. They're suing him because they want him out their house. And so they have filed eviction charges against their son.
Oh, my God.
Because in most places, like, if you live somewhere for longer than a certain, like, 2 weeks, you technically are a resident, right?
Right.
And so just, like, that's why if you don't pay your rent.
And if you, like, right, if you get mail to the residence.
Yeah, you get, like, a piece of mail there. So it varies. But, like, that's why if you get an apartment and you don't pay your rent, they have to take you. They can't just say get out. They can't just change the locks. They got to take you to court. Mm. There's a process, right? If you let a neighbor come stay with you or you let your cousin come stay with you and they've been there for a while, they don't move out, you can't really just change your locks. You have to really go through a legal process because after a while, someone becomes technically a resident.
Oh, my goodness.
And we would presume that if your parents say get out, you got to go. But apparently, 18-year-olds everywhere, that's not the case, okay?
Well, someone should have told my mom that.
That's what I'm saying. If we had on 18, like, hey, so we got squatters' rights.
How old is he? He's
30 years old. Eh? You know, so anyway, he's 30 years old, but he's saying, hey, my parents have not given me enough notice. I need time to get my life together. I probably need another good 5 or 10 years. You know what I'm saying? But he's saying, you know, can it do take time?
Is he staying in his original, like, childhood room?
I don't know. Surely God, he's got the basement by now. You know, the same room you had at 8, and I got to serve you at 30. I don't think the women want to come, and you have your, like, Winnie the Pooh, like, border. So hopefully he got the basement. But anyway, so he says his parents have not given him enough notice. Now, his parents say they've given him 5 written notices over the past few months, telling him he got to go. They said they've even offered to help him pay his bill. Like, look, we will give you some money for your deposit. We will, you know, hire you a moving truck. But he is saying, I need more time. He's saying that his parents are only suing him because they're mad. They're being retaliatory. But his parents are saying, like, look, he's not giving us no money. He's not paying us no family expenses. And he does not help out. This is probably what's really got him in trouble. His parents say he does not help with chores around the house. The parents will go for a lot of stuff. But if you ain't picking up after yourself, you probably got your dirty drawers. You got the little sock under your bed.
Dirty dishes.
Male listeners, you know that sock, you know, that's under the bed.
I just got it. I was like, what? Why is it a single sock? I didn't know.
There's a couple of,
it's like, first of all,
I digress.
No.
So what do you all think? Number one, if y'all saw my Facebook a few weeks ago, I posted, like actually last week, because Steve Harvey, who I do not like,
yes.
I was chilling at my mother's house. I went to visit my mother for a couple of days, right? And I'm working on my laptop, and she's in her bedroom, and I hear Steve Harvey's show come on. And I'm like, oh, she's keep watching Steve Harvey. But then I hear him say something to hurt my feelings. So he asks his audience, parents, have y'all figured out at what age you're supposed to stop giving your children money? Right? He's like, what's the age where you cut the children off financially? Right. And I felt personally offended, right? And I basically made my mother turn, I plugged the TV. You know, so again, like, I feel really particular about, and again, I'm a young 30-something, but I feel like your parents supposed to keep giving you money as you need it. Yeah. So a question for you all is, number one, is 32 old and still be living at home? Unless you have, like, you know, sometimes you maybe you're a college student, maybe you're a divorcee. Mm-hmm. But just if you're just a general hardworking white American cisgendered straight dude, should you still be living in your parents' basement? Number two, is it fair for your parents to take you to court? Like, so let's talk this through, y'all. What do you all think about, number one, living at home at 30 years old and then not paying no bills, not helping out, but then also at the time of your parents to sue you, though?
I mean, for me, I'm like, why can't he just stay there?
Forever. I mean, agree.
My personality did not vibe with the whole, like, I'm staying with my mom and my parents past 18. Like, yeah, I was out. I had to be out. Yeah, it wasn't no, like, force. It wasn't no, like, hey, wait a minute. Or, no, it was like, you know, and I'm out.
And I'm
you know?
Out.
Yeah, like, you know, so for me, that was my personality. That's my person. So, but obviously, there's comfort. You know, he's finding comfort being at home.
Right.
And he's been there a long time after 18 yeah. and after, like, he could vote. So, like, I feel like there's a disconnect happening. Yeah. So, on the one hand, it seems like his parents have let him stay way too long, have not basically encouraged him to do chores around the house or help with the bills. Like, even just a nudge saying, hey, you're, like, 20 now, you know, or you're 21. You're able to drink. You're able to vote.
Yeah.
We think it's time that if you're working to contribute to, you know, yeah. this bill or pay the light bill or something. So it just seems like there doesn't seem to be any nudging.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, he's 30. It's time for him to go. And yeah. so now all of a sudden he's gotten used to this.
Just kind
of
chilling.
You know, just chilling and having the comforts of home, not having to contribute financially nor, like, in a domestic capacity.
Yeah.
So why would he leave that to go and do adult things, which is basically work just so you can pay bills and have the same amount of money every month?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
so I agree. It's like...
Darian, what do you think? I mean, is 32 old for him to still be chilling at home? Or if the offer stands, take it.
I don't know that I think that it's a yes or a no answer.
Okay.
I think that, of course, each situation is different based off of whatever those circumstances may be. However, I do feel like he may not be ready because clearly there wasn't any type of preparing for that.
So he's kind of like emotionally stunted. Like it's almost like being in jail. He hasn't grown in jail for 30 years. You don't know life on the outside.
Yeah,
like,
he doesn't know anything outside of that home.
Oh, goodness.
It's not time.
I mean, has there been a judge's decision yet?
This was just a matter of days ago, so I haven't heard the... But okay, so then let's ask this. So even if, dude, you should have been out the house 5 years ago, in the time for your parents to sue you, though... You know, like, is it time for your parents to take you to court?
I mean, that's the part that I think is the most hilarious. Because they have reached their breaking point. They have, it's like their blood pressure, everything is boiling over. They are sick of it. They are sick of him. They want him out. And whatever nudging or passive aggressive way or kind way or sweet way they've tried to do it before is obviously not affecting him. So they were like, okay, let's get serious. Let's bring you to court. And I think it's more hilarious that he's like, wait a minute. I'm ready to defend myself in court.
Oh, yeah. He probably got a whole lawyer. Because if he ain't been paying no bills, you got money stacked up. He probably got a whole lawyer.
I mean, my thing is, I'm sure someone showed up talking about you've been served.
Yeah.
So instead of him just being like, hey, mom and dad, what's the tea? And please don't. And no. And explain. He's like, oh, no, I'll have my dinner.
I'll see you all in
court.
Yeah,
so it's like too close and estranged at the same time.
Like, you're at dinner, but then there's, like, a restraining order, so you can't say pass the peas because you can't speak to you.
That's my point. Is there a restraining order in place? Like, they're living in the same house suing one another.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's still not picking up his clothes or doing domestic chores or contributing financially. So, yeah, is it just...
I just want to know what was that breaking point. Like, there had to be the sock
under the bed, the crusty
it's,
sock.
It's not the sock under the bed.
No, okay, well. Okay.
It's not the sock. But I think that Darian is absolutely right. I don't think that he was necessarily having company or friends over or, like, booze or bays over.
Yeah, right.
So I don't even think it's about, like, you know, you're a grown person, so get your grown house so you can have grown company.
Yeah.
So he does. He seems to have led a very isolated
existence. But you never know, child. But let me ask y'all this. Obviously, these are white parents.
Yes.
If this was a black parent, because I can't even see my mama even taking me to court, you know, for better or worse, black parents are going to call your uncles to come and strong-arm you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to get strong-armed out. They're going to, even if you don't get strong-armed, they're going to take all your belongings and throw them out on the lawn. You know, and
I don't know, because my cousin is still at home.
Okay.
Like, and my aunt is like...
Yeah.
when I tell you she babies her.
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, if your black parents want you to stay, like, if they want you to stay, you good.
It's never like, want you are there, you gonna go on your own at
yeah,
all.
If they don't want you there, they're not gonna even bother going to court. They're gonna basically strong arm you or do something.
Right, right.
But hey, we all know black people that coddle their children, so they just, you know, they 45, 50 years old, still living in their mama's basement, you know?
Because I do. I think with a lot of black families, age becomes very relative.
It does.
Yes.
And so people still call people Lil this or my baby that, and the baby be like 45.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I think about my own dad, you know, he still calls me Munch. I'm 38, you know? And
As in Munchkin.
Yeah. And Munchkin was when I was born.
Yeah.
And I'm 38.
Yeah.
I'm 38. Like, I mean, it's like, oh, it's like we are the same age.
We're not the same age. You're 6 months older than me.
Okay, well, anyway.
But yeah, so I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that it is, but I also think that they wouldn't go to such measures. But that has a lot more to do with black people aren't interested in the law enforcement.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody
not
going to court.
We're not going to pay your taxes. No. You know, or you have a, you know,
there's something.
We all be up under the jailhouse.
We ain't doing all that.
So in other news, y'all, this is actually really, really good news. So Sephora was docked. That's one of your favorite stores. You spend a lot of time there at the Mall St. Matthews. So they have actually, they're a pretty progressive company. They're actually starting a new program. It's a free program for the trans community. It's going to launch in June. It's actually going to be hosted by transgender Sephora staff members. But they're actually going to be doing, like, teach-ins, right? So you know how you might be able to go to the MAC counter and get a makeover, or if it's your prom night, they'll teach you how to do your eyeshadow or your makeup. So apparently, transgender folk, and probably just people who aren't trans but like makeup, can go and be taught how to do makeup.
I love that, because it's like, you know, sometimes going to the MAC counter be very unsettling.
Why?
You know, because for me, like, I don't want no makeup. I don't want no teaching. And, like, again, I, like, do my own makeup and leave me alone and don't talk to me. And I know what I'm getting.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't want to know about the sale. Like, just I don't want conversation.
Okay.
You know? And so, like, the one time that I have done it, I think I was with, of course, my mom, who likes to indulge in those things. People are like, have you smelled this fragrance? My mom is the type of person that's like, oh, my God, no. What is it? What's the name? It's like, oh, my God. We came in here for a certain item. Let's just leave. Right? So, like, the MAC counter is so like, oh, well, you know, that foundation you're wearing? No. Let me show you this.
So that's trying to always constantly upsell you?
Yeah,
or
upsell
you
by,
different...
to me, in my experience, upsell you by shading you.
Like, or telling you what you're doing.
Saying,
I'm going to tell you what you wear now.
Yeah, like, you'll walk past, or you'll be shopping for items, and they say, oh, you know, help you? Oh, no, thank you. Well, that lip, you know, what would serve better?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, girl, first of all, didn't nobody ask you?
Yeah.
You know, and I said, no, thank you. You know, but Sephora has always been warm and welcoming.
Okay.
They leave you alone. They give you advice. There's no shade. And I do. I mean, I love Sephora. I love it. I mean, it has not just makeup, of course. It has perfume. It has everything. And so it's like a Toys R Us for, like, femme people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just love it. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's an important program to have, Darius? So they've been having what they call these classes for confidence. So I imagine, you know, this is the third in their series.
Yes.
They probably have one for, like, if you're not familiar with makeup or you're maybe a stay-at-home mom. And so this is just another in their classes for confidence. But do you think, Darian, that it's important to have places that are expressly for trans people? So there might be a trans woman, right, who you may say, like, oh, you know, my hairdresser is cool with everybody, but there's something about the business itself saying this is open to trans people in particular. Do you think they found safety in that and that there's a benefit in that?
Yes, definitely. I think that that was the part I was excited about seeing was the fact that they were doing the confident classes.
Yeah.
And I think that's very relevant and important, because sometimes it's hard for those members of that community to feel comfortable in their own skin. And especially when they're doing makeup and they're doing hair, they haven't quite figured out their look.
Absolutely.
They don't really know what works. And if they're new to it, they're probably not blending correctly or using the right color or using the right shade. And so I think that those classes of confidence, and then also having... I think I read that there were going to be actual people who were of the community teaching them. So I think that aspect of it, I think, is probably the best part about it all.
Absolutely. I think I appreciate cisgender straight women or cisgender gay women who try to be trans supportive.
Right.
You know, and so like I have friends, I also trans friends, like go to her, like, oh, I went to a new hairdresser. They hear me looking jacked up. You know what I'm saying? Because there are, you know, just because, you know, so all that to say, I agree with you, Daria, that to have another trans person knowing about the idiosyncratic ways in which we're different, right? You know, the certain techniques and tricks of the trade, you know, I think it's important that sometimes there are things that maybe other people who are not of that community might overlook. And so I think that it's really beneficial to actually have trans members, you know, teaching the classes. I think it's phenomenal. Sephora clearly is doing some really, really good stuff. Right. And it's cool that they're not like, that trans people are not an afterthought. Like a lot of companies trans as the token or the afterthought. Mm-hmm. And Rihanna talked about that with her Fenty line, like, trans women are going to be part of, like, the main models. Like, they're not an afterthought. They're not, you know, some kind of novelty to the process. They're a main part. They're people. They wear makeup like anybody else.
Mm-hmm,
and so I think that's really, really, really cool.
Yeah, and I love it. And I just think that within all communities, mentorship of some kind has to take place. And creating dialogue and with folks who are of your same experience is, like, so, so important and dire in some cases. Yeah. And so I just think it's great that folks will be able to see the reflection. They'll be able to get mentoring. Yeah. They even might be able
to get a
get,
job or
something. You know, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Good at this. Let me get you a job. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Right. I love it. I love it. So, Doc, what? Okay, so listen, you always say that most Americans do not read, right? Like, that's something that you always say, that Americans are stupid. Well, you don't say not all of y'all. Okay, that. Listeners, you don't say that all of y'all are stupid.
I just said that they would rather be opinionated than informed.
And that's something I completely agree
with. So, like, a lot of Americans say, that's my opinion. That's my opinion. It's like, well, you're not informed on the issue you're speaking about. So it's it's fine and good that you want to keep saying that's my opinion. They say it almost to end a conversation.
Yeah.
Well, that's just my opinion. It's like, well, it's not an informed opinion, right? And it's not an informed
thing. It's based on what your pastor told you.
Yep.
It's based on what your mama told you.
Right.
It's based on what your peer group. You know, I remember back during like sex education, they were like, most people learn their attitudes from their peer group. It's like that's not a good So all that to say that Jimmy Kimmel put that theory to the test. It said that majority of Americans do not read on a regular basis. Most of them have not read a book in the last year. And so Jimmy Kimmel, who's a late night comedian, late night talk show host, put that theory to the test. So he'll often, so for example, a couple years ago, when people talk about Obamacare, right? We hate Obamacare.
Yeah, yes.
So he went to the streets and asked people. Obamacare is the common name, but it's really called. It was called the Affordable Health Care Act, right?
Yes.
But he went to the streets and asked people. You know, I laugh to think about it. Like, to compare Obamacare to the Affordable Health Care Act, right? And these people would say things like, "Oh, I hate Obamacare, something, 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 you know, but I prefer, like, American Health Care Act." You know, like, basically, they were the same thing, right? These people would be like, they hate one but love the other, and they're like, but you know, and again, these people say things with such confidence.
Yes.
You had a TV camera in front of your face, a microphone, and then you, with all confidence, you like, something.
Yeah.
You know, and
Jimmy, after they recorded, they probably went home and told their family, like, I cannot wait to tune in to Jimmy Kimmel.
I'm
going
to
be on
I
there.
I bet you that, yeah.
And I shared my
watch
opinion.
Parties, all that.
So I want you all to take a listen. So Jimmy Kimmel hits the streets, and he asked people a very simple question. Name a book, okay? Not name the last book you read, not name a bestseller. He says name any book. Okay? And listen to the confidence when people are like, oh, yeah, I can name a book. He's like, okay, well, name one. And people... enough of me. Let's take a listen.
According to a recent study from the Pew Research Center, almost one in four Americans has not read a book in the past year. That actually seems high to me. I bet it's even fewer than that. So to find out, this afternoon we sent a team out to the street to ask pedestrians to name a book. Any book. Could be the Bible. Could be 50 Shades of Grey. All we wanted to know is, can you name a book? And here's how that went.
Can you name a book?
Oh, yes. I don't read books. But what's it called?
Can you name a book?
No.
Can you name a book?
I don't read books. Yeah, that's it.
A book? The Lion King.
The movie?
Yeah, the book.
You read the book The Lion King?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking. Dang, hold on, man. I haven't even read it. Hold on, let me think. Hold on. Can we cut this and do it again?
Can you name a book?
A book? Any book? The Jungle Book. It's not a book, is it? It's a movie. Jungle Book, sure.
Is it?
Both.
Are you sure?
No.
Do magazines count?
No, those wouldn't be books.
That's correct.
I can name Moby Dick. That's an artist. He wrote a book called Horse. I like that book.
Moby Dick was the author.
Yes.
And the book was Horse.
Yes. That's what I said, huh?
What was the last book you read?
Probably Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss, maybe?
I haven't read a book for like 12 years.
I'm drawing a blank.
Jeez. I need books. Sorry. I am totally blanking out on books.
What do you do for a living?
I was a librarian. Now I'm unemployed.
All you have to do is pick up a book, because when you know how to read, adventures come to you.
That's right. Thank you, Shaq.
Goodness gracious, y'all. First of all, y'all, listeners, the visual, God. If you can go, you can put it in Google, you go to my Facebook page, if we're friends on Facebook, or my Facebook page is open. Just find that clip, y'all, because the visuals, even accompanying the audio, drives it home so much. Okay, what are some things we heard? The first person bragged, I don't read books. We heard two people brag, I don't read books.
I don't read books. I haven't read books in a long time, or I stopped reading books when I was 12, or I mean, it was just...
How many people said that Dr. Seuss was the last book? That was like 6 people that said that Dr. Seuss was the last book
they
read.
My thing is, even if that is the case, Dr. Seuss is the author? Can you name a story? Yeah. Oh, the Places We'll Go?
Yeah.
Green Eggs and Ham?
Red Fist, Blue Fist,
come on.
Yeah. It was something.
I mean, come on. And then people listed Fairy Tale, Lion King, Jungle Book.
I was pleased with... Dude said Moby Dick. I was like, okay, I'm impressed. But then he said Moby Dick was the author. And the book was called Horace?
Horace.
He didn't say the book was called Ishmael. Like, my thing is, you could say the book was called Fish. Like, why was the book called Horace and Moby Dick wrote it?
I mean, literally, that's how people's thoughts are jumbled, because they're trying to come up with an answer. They're being put on the spot. Again, you have a camera. You have a microphone that is shoved in your face. Do you honestly think they're going to ask you about books?
Yeah. I get that. Part of it is the shock factor. And so they can count on the fact that you know, that's going to throw people off.
But there's absolutely no recall.
But I love it.
But once you get 45 seconds, and then, but the thing about it is, they're so confident. He said, Moby Dick. He wrote a book called Horace. And then we said, really? He said, yo, yeah. That's what I said, right? It's like... And then the dude said Lion King?
Yeah, he said Lion King. And he was like questioning like the movie or the book. The movie, both.
Yeah, the Jungle Book. Yeah. I mean, so anyway, I just that really, and so Doc, because you always say that, like in your classes, you talk about how Americans don't read. I'm like, oh, Doc can be exaggerating, child, because I love to read, child. You know me, child. If you tell me to go somewhere, I do what?
You pick up any kind of reading material.
I just grab it.
Menu or a flyer or the Alt Weekly or the newspaper.
I have to read it. If it's in your car, I pick it up and like read your personal mail, your love letters. And like, you know, I always grew up, Darian. Yeah. My mother taught me. I love to read, right?
You go to the library and check out books out of the public library.
Yeah. I take for granted that people like to read, but Darian, what do you think that most people why do you think people are averse to reading books? What do you think that's about?
I think because, honestly, we've gotten too used to watching and hearing.
Yep.
And so, me, myself personally, I'll be honest, I can't stand reading a book either. And like, so my boyfriend is constantly.
Collective sigh, listeners,
read.
Collective sigh. Okay, look at this at a live show. I'm going to ask y'all, should I put them out in the studio?
Listen,
but you voted,
I believe
so
in transparency.
Say. Okay, this is a safe space. Yes.
I believe in transparency. Okay. So I'm not really a big reader either.
Okay.
But my boyfriend loves reading, and so he's always pushing material.
At least you get it vicariously. Okay, all right.
Yes. Okay. He's always pushing material down my
throat. Darian, name
a
book. Okay, please don't let me down. I'm going to even give you a 30-second head start. I'm going to talk really slowly.
Obviously, The Color Purple. That's my favorite book.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, hold on. Is it a book or is it a movie? No, this way. It's both, right? No. Yeah. Okay. That's a good
answer.
It
really is my favorite book.
Okay,
no, and I mean, I think that, too, I think that most Americans, the reason why this happens is, and I didn't recognize this until I was in Philly. I was a grad student. And I was living with Yaba at the time, so who grew up to be Dr. Yaba Blay, right? Yeah. She's a professor. And then... Segmet, who actually is Dr. Segmet, right? Yeah. So we all eventually become growner and become professors. And so when the movers were moving us in this last house we stayed in South Philly, we had 4 bookshelves, right? All the bookshelves were completely full. And so, again, that's not odd to us, right? We've been in school over 10 years. I mean, at that point, from undergrad to doctorate, and then and we like to read, right? And we want to read the next book and the next book, and we're excited for Amazon Prime and 2-day shipping, and right, we're obsessed with books. And so the dude who was moving us in, one of them said, you know, I mean, what y'all in, you know, like school or something? He was like, you know, because it's like a lot of books y'all got. And I said, yeah, you know, and then I realized, oh my goodness, when I was a little kid and I would go into other people's houses, nobody had books. There were not books in their living room. There was not a study. There were not books in their bedroom. There were not books anywhere in that house. And so just like, you know, how I don't eat pork, but not because of religious or reasons or even kind of vegan or anything, right? My parents just never cooked it, right? My mom thought it was weird. It was always pink. She was like, no, from a little kid. And so she never fixed it for me. You know, my dad does, but my mom just never fixed it for me as a kid. And so I never really ate it. And so when I became grown and people were like, yeah, well, if you eat it, you'll probably get sick. I'm like, oh, well then, yeah, like I'm not doing that, right? So it just wasn't common. It wasn't a common thing. But reading was such a common thing for me as a little kid. My dad read to me. My mom read to me. They were really adamant about me reading on my own. And then there were always books. I mean, and I had Dr. Seuss. I had like Little Miss, those books, those Little Miss books.
Oh, like with the behavior.
Oh, my God, with the behaviors and the characters.
Did you have the one with the bad attitude? Because,
well, I did, but again.
You did read that again.
But again, it didn't have any effect on me.
Okay.
It was Little Miss Bossy. It was Little Miss Bossy. Yes. She was my favorite book.
Of course.
And I wanted to read her every night.
Okay.
So I love the little. Basically, it was me. It was my life story. And so I, you know, like those kinds of things, but also books by Baldwin and Alice Walker, who Darian named, Toni Morrison, right? My dad is an English professor. So we had a lot of novels around the house. My mom was really into fiction. So, like, reading is a common thing.
It was just commonplace for you.
And you know, I've been to your mom's house.
I still got like, my bookshelf when I was a kid.
Your mom has books in the house. And so, but a lot of houses you go into, if you think about it, listeners, they have magazines.
Yeah.
They're primarily in the bathroom.
They have video game systems.
They're primarily in the bathroom. Yeah. And nobody is interested in reading.
But do you wonder, I wonder, y'all, if maybe part of that is not just because they're just interested in reading, but also because, I mean, if you're not lucky enough to go to a good school system, like I was just always a really good reader. Like I was a good reader.
Mm-hmm,
so I enjoyed reading. Like I've never really met someone who's a really good reader who doesn't like to read.
But to me,
you know, so I wonder if maybe for some people who maybe is it because they're not necessarily good readers.
But again, reading is like riding a bike. They're not good readers because they don't have practice
at it. Okay.
And they don't have loved ones or people who are older than them teaching them that it's important, loving it as well.
Okay.
Reading to me is a generational thing, just like anything else. So if your parents grew up in a house where there was no books and there was no reading, then you're gonna grow up in a house, their kids are gonna grow up in a house where there's no reading, there's no books, and then generation upon generation upon generation happens like that. You see?
Okay.
So one generation in particular, I would think about like our grandparents' generation, like, you know, like my grandmother who only got a 10th grade education really emphasized education to my dad, right?
Okay.
Who then emphasizes it to me, even though formal education was something that Mo was not able to participate in because of Jim Crow, because of, right? I mean, her birth certificate said colored, X, Y, and Z. And so it wasn't about the fact that there was TV everywhere and media images everywhere. It was just about the fact that Black people were prevented from learning how to read, prevented from being educated, because they knew that education was a tool that one could empower themselves with. And so now we have generation upon generation of family members and loved ones who don't encourage reading, and they think it's actually associated with whiteness. Mm-hmm. People make fun of you if you're reading. My dad, when he was a little kid, he would go to his cousin's house, and they would all be playing outside, and they'd be like, you always read. Why you always reading all the time? And my dad's like, I like to read. And they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And it's like, what's wrong with me? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Being someone who's engaged in reading or an intellectual, that is considered odd in this country.
Well,
in other parts of the world, it is not. Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically everywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we also look more so for your talent and your abilities to do these things that are maybe sports,
like physicality.
Things. If you could dress, if you're beautiful.
Yeah.
We put a lot of emphasis on those things.
The superficial
and so
kind of stuff.
Scholarship.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
You know, we don't really put a lot of emphasis on scholarship. And I noticed that very, very early in my life that I was a scholar and my brother was the athlete.
Yeah.
And my mom attended a lot of the things that he did.
You better preach my life.
But
you better preach
when
my
it came
life.
Down
yes.
to
yep.
my FBLA conferences
Certainly, yes.
and MTRP
debate.
Programs and debate. I mean,
theater.
Like, they weren't there.
Yes, I feel mm-hmm. you.
And I won national titles and was able to pay for college because of those things, and that wasn't relevant. But my brother got a full ride for football, and we were celebrating.
Yeah.
You know,
parties,
it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very true. You know my family. You know, some of my lamentation is around that people, like the way that people don't find cachet in intellectual because they can't see me reading. They can't see my brain. They can't see me writing this over speech. They can't see me figuring out how I'm gonna chant at this rally. They can see me throw
football.
Half of the reason
is because they simply don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's not because you don't make sense, and you're not clear.
Even the ones in my family who know are smart. Even the people that encourage me to be smart. Because, you know, there was just a value placed in sports and physicality. There just was. Maybe because that's all they knew as people growing up in the 60s, 70s, 80s. But for me,
smarts ain't going to get you money.
Yeah.
Sports didn't get you money. Beauty pageants get you money. Yeah. Like, those things.
Well, they think that smarts won't get you money, but it does. I mean, you know, like, as long as...
I mean,
you're not going to get $1 million for being an intellectual, but again, I'll never be broke. I mean, that's the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, if I play ball and I break a leg, and I didn't manage my money well, I'm going to be broke. If I'm salt and pepper, I'm going to be broke. If I'm MC Hammer, but again, if I'm a smart MF-er, I'm a cunning, I'm never going to be broke.
I mean, we also value
competition. You know, that's something I really believe that, yeah.
And so because we are very competitive people, and we put a lot of emphasis on being competitive and winning, we're going to care about the things that we can go to and root for somebody to win.
And see someone get a trophy. Yeah, see someone physically demolish somebody as opposed to intellectually demolish because you're like, they can't keep up.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I don't get it when, like, families and parents and caretakers don't really celebrate academic or scholastic achievement. I absolutely don't understand it. I don't get it. But again, I was excited that, you know, for me, my parents always did that. But that's also because they came from, you know, when my dad gives his dissertation, he got it bound in this red, like, cover with, like, these gold pages, like, trimmed in gold for his parents, you know.
It's like a gift to his parents.
You know, as a gift to his parents. And, you know, he said, you know what my mom said when I gave her my dissertation, Munchkin, I had bound it all up? She said, that's a nice book, Ralph. He's like, you think she's ever read it? And I'm like, probably not. You know, so like, and then my mom told her mom, hey, mom, I'm going to college. And she said, fine, teen. You know, my mom's middle name is Martina, so they've always called her teen. So she's like, that sound good, teen. And that's it. My mom graduated college. No one attended. It wasn't even a discussion about going to her college graduation, even though she's the first person in her family to graduate college. Nobody cared. It was almost like something where Martina, that girl always been smart. Or that girl always been nerdy, or you know, as opposed to a celebration or an excitement, you know, and all those things. I mean, now it seems like with social media, you get a window into people's stuff, and it seems like across the board, at least in my timeline, there's a lot of Black families that are celebrating and being celebratory about their kids' academic achievements from high school to college graduations. But there is still the celebration of sleigh picks for prom. And I do see the sleigh picks for prom kind of being overwhelmingly the thing that I'm seeing more so than the cap and gown picks.
Yeah, yeah,
so, I mean, that's just, you know, so I just feel like, but again, I don't think that that's an exclusively Black thing either.
That is a quintessential American
phenomenon.
Yes, yes.
The American populace wants to be opinionated. They don't want to be informed. And they're, you know, this message is emphasized through all sorts of ways. Basically, you know, to make it associated with whiteness, to make it associated with a certain type of class of people, you know, make it seem like it's out of reach, make it seem like it's hard. I mean, whatever it is, it's like people are really proud to say, like, well, I don't read.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And I don't care about any of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Before we begin to wrap the show, I mentioned, listeners, we were talking about politics and jury duty. So let's skip right to what I think is going to be probably a very interesting conversation, or at least listening to you rant about it, Doc. But you've been on jury duty this week.
Oh, my God.
And although your service is not yet over, by the time the show airs, I think you'll probably
I certainly hope so.
But so you got a notice a few months ago.
Yes.
That you were called for jury duty.
Yes.
And in typical your fashion, you didn't want to do it. And
I didn't
want to
do it.
So you discovered that you could actually, someone told you that you can actually ask for a delay.
Right, because I didn't want to do it, but I also was teaching. I was in mid-semester.
In all fairness, I guess you were kind of doing your job.
Yeah, I was like doing my job, and I couldn't be off for that kind of period of time.
Yeah.
And so I basically called. You gave me the number to the office to call. Yeah. I called. They were very nice to me. And they said, would you be willing to be notified about serving again?
Yeah,
and I'm like, sure.
Deferment,
You know, and everybody else was telling me, yeah, if you say that, they'll never contact you again. So sure enough. Sure enough, as soon as the semester ends, I'm contacted again.
Yeah.
I had to show up this Monday for my first stint of jury duty. I've never been asked to serve on a jury, and it's usually because I live in cities not long enough.
Yeah.
But I've been here 11 years now. Yeah. So they called me, and so you go, and I was actually kind of excited.
You were excited the first day, Chad. You was up, you got your coffee, you were
I got
up,
my coffee.
There. Yeah, you were there on time.
I was, like, kind of excited because, you know, again, I felt like, okay, well, I can do my civic part and hopefully getting someone who's innocent, you know, getting people to think harder about their duties as a juror, all this kind of stuff. Child, please. I get there. I get there at 9:30.
Yeah, it was a long line, right?
We get scanned in. It was at least 300 of us. Okay. So typically the juror administrator told us that there are 1,000 people who are notified that they have jury duty. Only about 250 to 300 people actually show up the day they are called, right?
Okay.
Other people might give excuses, call, you know, whatever. But a lot of people just don't show up. They don't call. They don't say, give me an extension, nothing.
They just pay it. Yeah.
They just pay it and don't show up. But, you know, me, I'm like, oh, my God, it's like a fine or, like, I have
to go
to jail.
You face 6 months in jail. I'm like, girl, they're not going to lock me up. Throw that away. You're like, no, I have to go.
Yeah, so I'm like, I have to go. And so we all get there. We are sitting in this, like, big, like, holding room on these really uncomfortable chairs. We're not getting updated at all. We're not getting told how many cases are on the docket, how likely we are to be picked to go upstairs. We basically get excused for lunch around noon. And we get a 45-minute lunch. And so I'm thinking about all this stuff. So first, you're only paid $12.50 a day.
And yeah, so let's talk about that. So listeners, the jury pay is $12.50 a day. So $5 of that is considered your payment for your service.
And $7.
$7.50 is considered your reimbursement for the food or the gas.
And the garage. And because the park and the jury duty garage downtown is $8 a day.
Yeah.
They give you a dollar off. So instead of $9 a day, it's $8 a day.
Okay.
And this one black woman said, you know, well, you want us to be free for a 2-week period of time. That's almost $90. Like, what if you can't afford that? They said, I suggest you have someone drop you off and pick you up every day.
So just to be clear, listeners, you're expected to be on call essentially for a two-week period.
For 2 weeks. So I have to call in every night after 6 p.m.
To see if they want you to return the next day.
To speak to an automated system to see if my group number is needed the next day.
So if you're there for all 2 weeks, you may pay $90 in parking, right?
Yes.
You're only being reimbursed $12.50 a day. And again, you would think they would have some kind of accommodation.
And that
for
check
someone.
Doesn't come until 2 weeks after you finish serving your 2 weeks.
Yes. So after you're done serving 2 weeks later, you'll get a check for your $12.50 a day.
Yes.
And keep in mind, y'all, the federal minimum wage is more than $12. It's eight something an hour, right? So you can be there for 8 hours a day.
And when I was thinking about it, I was thinking that, you know, one, the woman's question was like, that's true. And again, that's not my situation. But when we think about Louisville, when we think about the state of Kentucky, when we think about the working poor folks in our city, that is astronomical. And especially if they work at a job that, although that job might not fire them for doing jury duty because that's against the law, they might not make their daily wage that they're used to making, that they need to make, that they're dependent on, you know, making for their children, for their family, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I'm not teaching right now. I still, you know, as an educator, I still get paid every month, you know. So, yeah, like, even though it's a complete waste of my time and incredibly boring and frustrating, I can literally go up there every day and just sit in this holding room with everyone else. But there were plenty of people that were there that this was really, really awful for them. They didn't know how they were going to pay for the garage. They didn't, you know how they were going to basically buy food out every day for their lunch.
Yeah.
They, you know, didn't have someone to drop them off and pick them up. I mean, as if that's somehow a really, like, reasonable solution. Okay?
Yeah.
The $12.50, when these folks, you know, the one guy I spoke with, the one juror, he was saying, you know, like, I make $22 an hour. And he was like, and my job's not going to fire me, but I basically get half of my wage because I'm at, you know, so
it's
like.
Just so our listeners know, so in terms of hard work, because people don't know, your job is not allowed to fire you. Like, if you get called for jury duty, the job has to allow you to go there without penalization.
Right.
They don't have to necessarily pay you. If you have a really good job, you'll get what they call jury duty pay, which means you still get your same salary, you know, plus whatever your little $12, you know what I'm saying? But so if I have a regular job, excuses me to go to jury duty, still pays me my salary, everything is all good. Most jobs, McDonald's, the hospital, may not do that. So you might be off work and not get fired, but you're not getting paid for that day.
So a lot of folks up there were frustrated because they felt like they were there not doing anything at all.
You're not
because,
even serving.
Again, you're not even getting called up. None of us, I yet haven't. This is my third day today when we're recording the show. I have yet to be asked to go up to the courtrooms. I'm literally sitting in this room. Monday, I was there from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. without leaving the room. I went outside to smoke a couple cigarettes. I went and got lunch for the 45 minutes, but I was basically in that room, right? Tuesday, luckily, I got released earlier than normal, but I still wasn't chosen to go upstairs. And even if you're chosen to go upstairs, that doesn't mean that you're sitting on a jury. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you're going to be functional for a trial. So it's a colossal yeah. waste of time.
Even
if you're excited about doing a civic duty, like how you get excited about voting,
yes,
which is
right.
a civic duty, right? To be a civically engaged person. It's overwhelmingly frustrating. You feel like you're wasting time. Some folks felt like they were losing money. They were missing time away from their families, all to just sit around with a group of strangers
yeah.
and be made to ask, hey, can I go outside and get some fresh air? Because you don't want to leave for too long, because what if they call your number? Yeah. And what if you have to go upstairs, right? And even that, let's say I was picked. Let's say I went up there. I was selected for jury. That trial lasted 2 days. Oh, my service isn't done. I have to still call every night after 6 p.m. for 2 weeks because they might be able to use me for another one.
Yeah, for another
jury. It's just
yeah,
I've never yeah. in any other place I've lived
yeah.
where jury duty stories that I've heard from friends or loved ones have ever functioned in this way.
Yeah.
Most folks show up, know what they're going to do, know if they're going to be selected or denied, and at the most it's 2 days, but you don't have to keep calling. I mean, 2 weeks is half a month. Yeah. That's a lot of people's time. I mean, seriously, it's a
oh,
lot
I know,
of...
I feel you, poor thing.
It's a lot
well,
of...
Well, I did
you know,
on Tuesday because you were having a tough go at it. I did on Tuesday come and meet you for lunch.
It was very sweet.
To try to cheer you up.
And
I surprised
it was very nice.
You.
And I thought we were just going to get the 45 minutes, but then they released me.
You know,
and everybody
because,
in the room started
because
cheering.
What? Because I'm a good luck charm. So basically,
well, basically.
I'm like, I'm going to come meet you for lunch and cheer you up.
Yeah.
And then basically, like, you all are free for the rest of your day to spend
yes.
the day with your best friends. And so we got to do that.
Okay.
So anyway, shout out to you, Doc, for doing Darian, let's clap for Doc because she did her civic duty. I'll be begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly. And I better not have to report tomorrow.
Okay.
Because that will be the fourth
well,
day.
Well, let that be a lesson to you, Doc, that when I tell you next time to tear that jury notice up and throw it away, you'll
oh
listen
my God,
to it, brother.
No.
Before
no,
we go, Darian,
to
yes,
rules.
To that. Darian, before we go, you have an event coming up. You have your second annual gala experience. Now, last year, you put together an LGBT-themed prom for those of us who perhaps didn't get to go to our original prom or maybe want a do-over, or those of us who'd like to have a good time and drink, like me and Doc. So talk to our listeners about what your gala experience is, where it'll be. Give us the details in case we have local or regional listeners who might want to come and have a good time with us.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for that. That was really nice. So, yes, I started a event called A Gala Experience, the Alternative Adult Prom. I basically created this event because I had a lot of friends who are transgender, and they didn't get to attend their high school prom as their true selves. So they were there with the normal, you know, date that you should have for prom and wear the normal attire you were supposed to wear. And so they were kind of uncomfortable. They don't share their prom pictures. They don't even talk about their prom experience. Because it wasn't a happy time for them. A lot of them weren't comfortable in their skin. So I thought about what I could do to kind of help them get that experience that I had. You know, I loved prom. I went to about 8 proms in high school.
Oh my God.
I did. Everybody wanted me to be their prom date, so I was
oh,
excited about
it. That's
a
humble brag, okay? You was popular.
Yes.
And I was prom king, and so all of those things were really exciting for me. So I had an awesome prom experience. So I wanted to give other people that experience. So I decided to do a gala experience. So I started it last year. This year's the second year that I'm doing it. It's going to be on June the 2nd at the Hilton Garden Inn Northeast. Tickets are available. You can find those tickets on Eventbrite, or you can find it on Facebook under A Gala of Experience, the Alternative Adult Prom. We're going to have a great time. It's going to be hosted by B96.5's Bella Ray. We're going to have some local artists perform. I also have some drag performers who are going to come and showcase their talents. So I just kind of want to support my community, uplift my community. So you'll notice that pretty much all the talent in the room will be members of my community. So
I love it. All right. Well, yes. There y'all go. If y'all want to get tickets to the event, you can, of course, find Darian on social media, and he will gladly get you hooked up. Darian, have you had a good time hanging out with us today?
Oh, my God, I have. I feel like I've arrived.
I have arrived.
I am here with yes. Strange Fruit. I have arrived.
Oh, well, good. Well, it's been a delight having you here, of course. But shout out to your boo, who's one of our favorite people as well, Deshane.
Yes.
Doc, I'm really, really proud of you. You voted. You went to jury duty. You actually have
First
won.
Of all, I vote every election.
Well, I'm not going to say like that, girl. I'm saying to say that you went up to me in your civic duty because, again, I voted, but I didn't have jury duty. So tomorrow I'm going down there. I'm going to ask them. ma'am, can they please assign me?
Can you take my place?
You know, like,
can you take
I'm
my
show,
place?
Show up in a Gilda, you know, in a dress and be like, my name is Kyla Story, and I'm just,
I sprouted
a goatee overnight, but it's really me. I promise it's me, and I'm gonna have a bad attitude. So they really believe it's me, you know.
And actually, you know what?
And chain smoke cigarettes
because we're all like basically sentenced to be together. I actually made friends.
I was shocked. I came to meet you today. I walked you to the garage, and you were speaking to people. And hey, Jim Bob. Hope we don't gotta come back tomorrow.
Hey, Susan.
And hey, Karen. See y'all tomorrow. I'm like,
and you know, I'm not friendly.
You are not.
I don't make friends.
I was shocked.
I mean, so, and I'm like, you know, really kind of awkward. And I, like, but again,
it felt like y'all were in jail together.
So we were bonding, and everyone I met had a bad attitude like me.
Yeah. Well,
and so because of that, I've made like two, three friends, and we chat, we see each other, we're like, oh, here again, you know? So yeah, I made like, chit chat.
You was like saying goodbye to these strange white people. I'm like, girl, who was that?
Yeah, I made chit chat.
You're like, oh, that's Michael. You know, he's from Dan County, and we. I'm like, girl, let's go. You know, so jury duty though has been an experience for you, and it has changed you and it softened your heart, and I appreciate that.
Yes.
So, all right, we're out of time, dear listeners. We will see y'all back here next week on the same channel at the same time. Darius, say goodbye.
Bye.
Doc, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our producer is Laura Ellis.
For more information, visit strangefruitpod.org, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at strangefruitpod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of LPM, its staff, or its underwriters.
Our executive producers are me, Jason Gardner.
And me, Kyla Story.
Thanks for listening.